ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद्भागवतम् कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 27 अटैक बाय चांडवेगा ऑन द सिटी ऑफ पुरंजनम। टुडेज़ टेक्स्ट इज नंबर 19। काइंडली रिपीट। कालस्य दुहिता काचित् त्रिलोकीं वरमिच्छति पर्यटन्ति न बर्हिष्मन् प्रत्यनन्दत कश्चन। ट्रांसलेशन। माय डियर किंग प्राचीन बर्हिषत्, एट दिस टाइम द डॉटर ऑफ फॉर्मिडेबल टाइम वाज सीकिंग हर हस्बैंड थ्रू आउट द थ्री वर्ल्ड्स। Although no one agreed to accept her, she came. Please repeat. My dear King Prachina Barhishat, at this time the daughter of formidable time was seeking her husband throughout the three worlds. Although no one agreed to accept her, she came. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In due course of time, when the body becomes old and practically invalid, it is subject to jara, the sufferings of old age. There are four basic kinds of suffering: birth, old age, disease, and death. No scientist or philosopher has ever been able to make a solution to these four miserable conditions. The invalidity of old age, known as jara, is figuratively explained here as the daughter of time. No one likes her, but she is very much anxious to accept anyone as her husband. No one likes to become old and invalid, but this is inevitable for everyone. Om Agnana Timirantasya Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Nama Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupah Kadama Hyam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guroho Shri Yutaparakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha श्री रूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजन सहितं कृष्ण चैतन्यदेवं श्री राधा कृष्ण पादान् सहगण ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगतपते गोपेश गोपिकाकांत राधाकांत नमोस्तुते। तप्तकांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च परितानां भावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौड़ भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Again, this is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 27, Text 19. Kalasya duhita kachit trilokin varam ichhati pariyatanti na barhishman pratyanandata kashchana. My dear King Prachina Barahishat, at this time the daughter of formidable time was seeking her husband throughout three worlds. Although no one agreed to accept her, she came. Yesterday we heard how King Puranjan collected taxes in the city, known as Panchala. Where's Panchala? Anybody know? Huh? No, it's a physical place. It's not just a metaphor. In Punjab. Exactly. So it seems that he was the king of that place, perhaps. But at any rate, he was taking all this money that he was collecting from citizens, and thus he was able to maintain his sexual indulgence. It says here, being completely under the control of women, he could not understand that his life was passing away and that he was reaching the point of death. At that time, the daughter of time itself, Kala Siddhita Kachit, a particular daughter of time, it's mentioned here, she was searching throughout the three worlds, trying to make someone her husband, but nobody wanted to accept her. So it's natural that nobody wants to accept old age. After all, it's a miserable condition. And we don't really understand what kind of miserable condition it is until we have to undergo it. And therefore, everyone does have to undergo it. If one has prepared for old age before old age strikes, then one can process it more productively, more without being disturbed. As Krishna said, tiras tatra namuhyati. We all have to go through these stages. Asmin dehe komaram yovanam jara. It's mentioned. These are the things that we find throughout Srila Prabhupada's books repeated again and again and again. Simply because, although it's very simple to understand in theory, it's very difficult to accept in fact. When old age is a tangible fact, when it invades your life and ruins your life, checks your activities, checks your desires, challenges your very concept of who you are, what to speak of what you can do, or what you once were, even worse than that, it's a great challenge. And one has to become dhira. In the late 1990s, my father died of spinal cancer. And he was spared a very hellish death. But I saw when I went to visit him in the hospital, actually nursing home, it was hospice in effect. And I not only saw him, but I looked around and saw all these other people in various stages of disintegration. Some of them were losing their minds and were screaming nonsense. Some of them were losing their control of their bowels and were making a mess for the nurses to come and clean up. Some of them were, I mean, every conceivable mode of psychophysical disturbance that you can imagine, there it was. All in plain as day. And I got the realization at that point that unless we are prepared for that by burning into our microchip, so to speak, the sadhana that we're enjoined to practice now while we can, it's not going to be very easy to do that. In fact, it's not very likely that we will do that. Throughout her life, my mother always had the policy that if by some chance I find myself in a hospital and in order to maintain my life they have to hook me up with tubes and all sorts of artificial things, she said, don't do that, just let me die. I would rather just die. But when it actually came to that point and we had to inform her that the doctor says you've got only a matter of days to live, and now you're breathing because this machine is hooked up to you and forcing air into your lungs. But as soon as we flip the switch, that's going to stop and you're going to die. Then she reversed her lifelong policy. So it's not something that's really that easy to deal with, although it's very simple to understand. And of course, when we're young and everything is fine, in the springtime of life, so to speak, these things mean very little to us. And if we're very fortunate and if we've practiced Krishna consciousness to some degree throughout our lives, with some degree of seriousness, if we've heard carefully from Srila Prabhupada, then when it actually comes time for us to deliver on what we've heard, then we can maybe be somewhat prepared. Otherwise, it's expected that everybody freaks out at the time of death. That's the default rule of thumb. So Puranjana's time has come. Every dog has his day, as they say. If we invest our energies in creature comforts, then when the creature disintegrates, then so does your comfort. What did this poet say? Sick with desire and chained to a dying animal, he knows not what he is. This is the human condition. So this is our condition as well. And how do we know how conditioned we are? Well, stop eating. Just don't eat for, you know, as long as you can. Everybody's fine as long as their belly is full. Or as long as we have in America, as long as we have enough oil to keep our cars running the way that we want them to run. And as long as we can pillage and rape and destroy other countries through the agency of their own governments, then we can maintain our lifestyle. But we saw some 10 years ago or so, when there was a hurricane in the southern part of the United States, that people instantly were converted into savages. After the city of New Orleans was destroyed, so was the moral fiber of the people, because the moral fiber of the people is resting on a very strong foundation of sense gratification. And when that sense gratification is interrupted for a person who has cultivated that attachment, then that person forfeits humanity and becomes a savage beast again. Because really that is the platform of sense gratification. It is animal existence. Humanity is not defined just biologically. It's defined in terms of how much we follow the tenets of Shastra and utilize the human form of life for the purpose that those Shastras teach. It's meant. On the other hand, just a short while later, there was a similar disturbance in Mumbai and not that much problems. Or, for that matter, we were talking about Fukushima, Japan. Sometime recently, they had a nuclear disaster there. And it didn't have the same result because the character of the people was different there. It's something to think about. Recently, we heard from one devotee from New Zealand describing the aftermath of so many disastrous earthquakes there. And not only the physical aftermath, but also the psychological aftermath, and that's an important point to consider. How attached we are, and how sober we are, and how civilized we are, and how dignified we are, it's all dependent on sense gratification. If someone takes away your sleep, you go crazy. Every CIA agent actually is aware that everyone has a breaking point. What's yours? It's something to think about. It really is something to think about. And verses, or rather passages like this one in the Bhagavatam, should precipitate that kind of thought. We really are entangled a lot deeper than we'd like to admit. And we may not have taken as much advantage of the process of disentangling ourselves as we could have. But we do have time, while we have time. And that's what we're talking about here. Kalasya duhita, the daughter of time. Because time, in due time, jara will come. So time, jara, old age, is considered to be the daughter of time. She's produced in due course of time. Everywhere. And nobody wants to accept her, but she wants to accept anybody and everybody, and she generally does. And even Puranjana later on in this narration, it seems her name changes or her form morphs a little bit into a slightly different character called Kalakanya. Kalakanya, it means the same thing as Kala Duhita. They both mean the daughter of time. So she came, and even this serpent that is fighting, Jai Shri Shri Gornitai, Shri Shri Krishna Balaram, Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundar Ki Jai. Even the serpent of the five-headed serpent that is helping to defend the city here, this serpent alone cannot stave off all the days and nights that time operates very gradually with days and nights. It's measured in days and nights. Ayurharati vaipungsam ajnastam chiyannasau. That with every day and every day, daybreak and every dusk, we can say, another chapter of our life is closed and lost. Except for those who utilize that time wisely by discussing Uttama Shloka, the Varta of Uttama Shloka. So this is the idea here. Pariyatantina Barahishman Pratyananda Kashna, although no one likes it, you have to accept it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So before age comes, let us practice Krishna consciousness very seriously, chiefly through chanting the holy name. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Someone recently circulated on the internet a video clip of one of my god sisters who has now been admitted into a nursing home, and she's got severe dementia, can't think straight, doesn't know anybody, can't recognize anyone, doesn't know anything, what's happening. But she can chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare perfectly, and she's quite happy to do that. So that's what has to happen. That's what has to happen. At least this much has to be, as I said, burnt into the microchip so that it cannot be erased, despite the most traumatic of circumstances. The holy name is like our boat to save us from the ocean of material existence. Now, in one of his verses, Srila Bilvamangala Thakur actually says that the holy name is rather like a rope. And it's a rope that Krishna uses to reel us in, to pull us out of this ocean. But it's also a rope that we can use to pull Krishna toward ourselves, if we so choose. So this is the great mercy of the Kali Yuga, that we have this holy name. In other times and other places and in other circumstances, one would have to undergo severe meditation for tens of thousands of years. Or one would have to execute costly sacrifices, or one would have to do elaborate deity to worship, as we see some vestiges are there in certain temples. But in the Kali Yuga, Kalautadhari Kirtanat, the same effect is achieved simply through Hari Kirtan, Sankirtana especially, but even Japa also. This is the idea. So before old age comes, we have to take advantage of that. Now, once old age does come, there are some benefits to that. I remember many years ago, His Holiness Lokanath Swami, he wrote in his Vyas Puja offering about something about old age, and he was actually very appreciative that old age was starting to come, because old age has very good for spiritual life. Youth is a great distraction for anyone trying to practice spiritual life. It's very difficult because the mind is inexperienced, the emotions and certainly the senses are wild, and one sees only infinite opportunity for everything that one has come into this world to do. It has not, his enthusiasm or capabilities or facilities or encouragement have not yet been worn down by the process of Maya. And so it's very difficult. But in old age, one has a more sensible view of life. One is tempered by experience. One gains, hopefully, some wisdom. And that's, again, depending on how we've read Srila Prabhupada's books, depending on how we've chanted the holy name of Krishna. It's described that all of one's bhajan is actually tested at the time of death. It may look good to someone else, but it's useless if it doesn't help you at the time of death. We have to benefit ourselves here, first and foremost. So old age is also good, provided one is prepared for it. Now, there is There is a poet named T.S. Eliot. He's a Nobel laureate. And he was actually a very spiritual man. He knew Sanskrit. He'd read Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literatures. So he wrote very nicely a poem called Four Quartets. And in that group of poems, I'll cite one excerpt which I think is relevant here. He says, quote, "Let me disclose the gifts reserved for age, to set a crown upon your lifetime's effort. First, the cold friction of expiring sense, without enchantment, offering no promise but bitter tastelessness of shadow fruit." That's old age. "Second, the conscious impotence of rage at human folly and the laceration of laughter at what ceases to amuse." Sometimes when people are old, they become a little bitter, don't they? This is why. And last, the rending pain of reenactment of all that you have done and been, the shame of things ill done and done to others harm, which once you took for exercise of virtue. Then fool's approval stings and honor stains. From wrong to wrong the exasperated spirit proceeds, unless restored by that refining fire where you must move in measure like a dancer." He's talking about spiritual life in the last sentence or so, that we reincarnate throughout this material world in so many different forms. Our consciousness is recognizable when we look in the mirror to understand where we were in our last life. You want to have an idea, just look and see at the byproduct. It's a little more subtle to understand what we will become in a future life. It's not that easy, but we can do that. But it's more subtle. What we're talking about, what is the vehicle of transmigration? The vehicle of transmigration from one body to another is samskara. The psychological status, or the psychological, the state of our psychology, we can say, at any given point, is the result of our, what psychologists call both our nature and our nurture. Nurture means sadhana, and nature means samskrita, samskriti, rather, samskara. How we have refined our consciousness. So if we, Prabhupada says so many times, if we concern ourselves chiefly with creature comforts, then we're likely to become a creature. If we concern ourselves mainly with higher pursuits but godless, then we may become devas, or at least something more elevated in this world. We can do anything we want. It's a fact. As I mentioned a moment ago, all opportunities in life are there to us while we have this life. It's a fact that we can have anything we want if we set our minds to it. But that's going to be limited in this world by our karma unless we choose to step outside of the system of karma, and that's what Krishna consciousness does. So we have the outrageous proposal of actually entering into the intimate associates of Sri Sri Radha Shyama Sundara. The unlikelihood of that project is so great, given our disqualifications in this Kali Yuga, that it's virtually a hopeless task. But by divine grace, even a lame person can hop over mountains. Even a blind man can count the stars twinkling in the evening sky. Even a dumb person can recite beautiful poetry. Prabhupada said impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. So we, in the human form of life, we have this mission to become Krishna consciousness, as Krishna has very nicely put it at the end of chapter 7 in the Bhagavad Gita. Jara marana mokshaya ashritya mam yathanti ye. Those who have taken shelter of me and who are trying to become Krishna conscious, they're actually on the path beyond old age and death. And therefore they know everything about fruitive activities, they know everything about spiritual life. They're actually tatparatva, you can say, te brahma, tatparatvena nirmalam. They're as transcendental as the Lord is. This is what we have to do. But it's only possible by divine grace. By karma, there's no hope in this age. By gyan, well, there is no gyan in this age. It's only a gyan. Really, there's nothing but divine grace, and that grace is invoked through chanting the holy name. Therefore, we say, Harer Nama, Harer Nama, Harer Nama, Haiva Kevalam. Kalao Nasyeva, 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 Gatiranyatha. So I'll stop here. These are just a few things we can think about. Does anybody have any questions or comments? How do we understand how do we reconcile the two ideas? Sometimes we hear that the pain of death is equivalent to thousands of scorpions biting at once. And sometimes we also not only hear, but we may observe that a person passes away very peacefully, evidently without any pain whatsoever. That was the case with my mother. Very peaceful. She was smiling, happy, no problem. Of course, we had given her every dose of Krishna consciousness possible for about 40 hours straight before that happened. So that's understandable in her case. But how do we reconcile this? Well, it's considered to be an impious death if someone has to go very suddenly or in a great deal of pain, or if one's killed, for example. Relatively pious death. There have been many pious people. They just finish their daily duties and they go offer obeisances to the Lord and they leave their body, just like that. So it depends on one's karma. I mean, either way, nobody really likes to leave, but it can be relativized. It can be made comfortable according to our karma. It can be made uncomfortable according to our karma or Krishna's desire, as the case may be. Because karmani nirdahati kintas bhakti bhajam. For those who participate in bhakti, it's said that Krishna will modify that karma. But who knows how and to what degree? Who can say? So the simple answer is that it's relative. Is that okay? Anything else? Yes? What happens to a person who's killed by a bullet? I'm sorry? Yeah, sudden death. That's the same category, like I said, it's considered to be an inauspicious death. But what happens to him or her? Well, that depends on the consciousness. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajanji ante kadevaram. Yeah, if a person is killed by a sniper bullet, especially, because you don't see that coming or don't expect it, if a person is killed in the war, he's focused on fighting, and it would seem his consciousness is perfectly there. Well, it depends. If it's a dharma yudha, then that person can be elevated. Sargadwara, as Krishna says, it opens the doors to liberation. But nowadays, we don't really have any dharma yudhas because we don't really have any dharma. Yes. Well, this is that's another matter. The terrorist who believes that he's fighting on behalf of dharma, that is described in Bhagavad Gita in chapter, what is it? 18:30 and 31. We talk about dharma in the modes of passion and ignorance. Let's see if I can find it really quickly. Yaya dharmam adharmam cha karyam cha karyam eva cha ayatha vat prajanati buddhi sa parsa rajasi. a person who doesn't really know what to do or what the difference between dharma and adharma is, that person is bewildered by passion. On the other hand, adharmam dharmam iti ya manyate tamasavrata sarvarthan viparitamscha buddhisa parthatamasi. The intelligence of a person who is in the mode of ignorance, he thinks that adharma is actually dharma. And he thinks that dharma will be an adharma. And viparitam, he's always striving in the wrong direction. That sounds very similar to what we just read. From wrong to wrong, the exasperated spirit proceeds. This is life in the mode of ignorance. So that's the problem. There are tamasic religions. There is an exercise of tamasic faith. That's all described. It's one of the most understudied and underemphasized sections of the Bhagavad Gita, the first several verses of chapter 17, or chapter 17 in general, which talks about the divisions of faith. Shraddhama yoyam purusha yoyat shraddhasa evasa. Whatever the shraddha of a living being is, that's what the living being is. And this faith can be manifested in a tamasic way, in a rajasic way, in a sattvic way. We need to be aware of it. What mode of faith do you have? Think about it. We have to be discriminating and have to be very conscious, because consciousness or awareness is the primary characteristic of sattva-guna. And it's only in sattva-guna that one can see anything straight. Other than outside of sattva-guna, then, like I said, you don't know what's dharma, what's not dharma. You're just confused by your own desires. So, and the person in tamo-guna is even worse, because he's not confused. He's very sure about himself, but he's in maya. So that's a problem. Is that okay? Yeah, terrorism in general. This is what's going on. Sure, no problem with that. Exactly. If you're killed, you get 70 virgins in the Svargaloka, and it's a nice way to inspire teenage men to go and kill themselves, isn't it? But it's tamoguna. So here's the thing. From a scientific perspective, let us always recognize that Srila Prabhupada, his view of dharma is not just sentimental and not even just religious. It's very comprehensive. It encompasses all aspects of life, and it's very scientifically so. The one thing that our path has to offer the world of religious faith is a very scientific understanding of the difference between these three modes of faith can immediately eradicate so many problems. People often say that there's so many wars on account of religion. Well, not exactly. On account of tamasic faith, perhaps, or rajasic faith, certainly also. But to cultivate sattva-guna, that's something that is unique. I don't see it very much in any other tradition. That's a very, very important point. One more question. That's a very big question. Please elaborate on the divisions of faith. I mean, that's a whole chapter in Bhagavad Gita, as I said. And I'm sorry, but I have to go quickly, so I don't have time to do that. But what I can say is that if you study the commentaries of Bhagavad Gita, particularly those of Baladevidyapushan and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, on the first three or four verses of the 17th chapter, this thing is discussed there, and very interesting insights are given there. But it's not only there, it's actually in chapter 14, it's in chapter 16 indirectly, certainly in chapter 17, and also in chapter 18, which I just quoted from. If we read Bhagavad Gita very, very carefully every day, then these things become very clear, especially if any questions that we have, we clear up by studying Srila Prabhupada's purports or the writings of the other acharyas on these things. Is that okay? Okay, one more question, last one, please. If a person is suffering from old age or he's ill, is he allowed to what? To take his life. Well, generally suicide is discouraged because if a person deliberately, intentionally kills himself or herself, then that person will not be awarded another human body because he's not used it properly. That's the case of with anyone. When we don't use what we're given appropriately, then we lose the opportunity to use those things again. That said, I was just discussing this with a god brother the other day about Chota Haridas. He had a question that what was his destination, because it would seem that he killed himself. So one answer that has been given is that actually he didn't kill himself, because if you go to the Triveni Sangam, now we're having the Kumbh Mela, so everybody's conscious of Triveni Sangam, there is an actual rite that is performed in which you can attain what they call Ganga Prapti, attaining the Ganges. You can drown your physical body in that way. And if you follow that rite, my understanding is that it's not considered to be suicide. Another thing which is given in the Shastra is to simply fast until death, as Maharaj Parikshit did. So he's exonerated from, you know, any accusation of suicide as well. So, you know, but generally people want to take the easy way out with a bullet or whatever. So that's not allowed. I mean, in all cases, yas shastra vidham utsrujya vartate kama karata nasa siddhim avapnoti nasukham na paramgitim. Krishna makes this clear at the end of chapter 16, that a person who gives up the injunctions of the shastra and works whimsically instead, that person doesn't get either happiness nor the supreme destination. He doesn't get any kind of progress at all. So we always have to work in a manner that's dependent on Krishna and submissive to him, or his representatives in most cases. Okay? Jai. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.